Thank you, Barrett. Okay, I want to start out today with a little test. I know you love this stuff. I want to see if you can complete this phrase. It's an idiom, an expression that's common. You like doing this. I'm going to say the first three words and see if the rest of it kind of pops into your heads. Maybe it won't. I'm not sure. Ready? Where there's a... Unbelievable. Where there's a will, there's a way. Isn't that incredible? Now, how does everybody on earth, almost, I guess, know that saying? Where there's a... And everybody says, a will, there's a way. How is that possible? I don't know. That phrase was first used almost 400 years ago, as far as you can trace it back, at least in written form. It was first published. It may have been used verbally long before. Who knows? But in 1640, the English author George Herbert first wrote, quote, "To him that will, ways are not wanting." And that was such a catchy and insightful phrase that by the early 1800s, it had been universally altered and adopted as where there's a will, there's a way. And you know it here in Bowmansville, Pennsylvania today. Isn't that amazing? And the key word here is will. The word will. It's an interesting word, the word will. When you stop and think about it, it's a very interesting word. It has a lot of different meanings, and it can even be someone's name, right? Danger Will Robinson, right? Yeah. Now, our librarian's not here today. Maybe that's a good thing. Oh, here she is. Okay, I may get in trouble with the librarian because I'm going to try to talk about the word will. The word will can be a verb. Like you will something to happen. That's not too common, I don't think. Much more common, it's a modifying verb, like a modal verb or something like that. Like, I will preach for an hour, Brian. You can't stop me. I will do this. I will do that. Right? We say that all the time. Right? You're at the door. I will leave, Brian says. Right? You do that all the time. Okay. But in the famous phrase, this idiom, where there's a will, there's a way, the word will is a noun, right? And it means, you know, something that you really want to have happen, a strong desire for a certain outcome. That's the will. So if you say to someone, perhaps someone who has a lofty goal, or maybe someone who's getting a little discouraged in life, you say to them, hey, where there's a will, there's a way. What you're doing there is you're trying to encourage them and telling them that, you know, with determination and hard work, true commitment, you can find a way to succeed. That your will, your desire for a certain outcome can be accomplished. Now, it's true that as you travel down the road of life, it may not lead exactly to where you thought it would, right? You may not become an astronaut. You may not be the starting pitcher for the Phillies. No. But, I bet you can become a pilot or maybe the coach of a high school baseball team. Yeah? And your will, your true desire, may be more satisfied than you ever could have imagined. You know, especially as the rest of your life, including God's will for your life, fills in around it. And that's an important part. And something we want to be mindful of, hopefully every day, God's will. And what does that really mean? What does that really mean? God's will. Well, the Bible describes two main types of God's will. The first is God's will of decree, meaning that which he definitively wills, which is a verb, to have happen. And it, of course, happens. He wills the world into being, or whatever, you know. That's God's will of decree. And the second is God's will for our lives. And this is God's desire for what he would ideally want for us and our lives. And the kicker is, it does not always happen. It does not always happen. And this is a super important, maybe basic, maybe obvious and basic, but super important distinction. God's will of decree, boom, it happens, right? It always happens. He always gets what he wants. But God's will for our lives, he does not always get what he wants. Does not always happen. And what is the reason for that? What is the difference? And it's incredible, because here it comes again, our word of the day. The difference is free will. Will. We are free to desire certain outcomes in life that are not necessarily aligned with the will of God. And we know it. We know that's true. But free will is the basis for our human existence. It's the basis for our relationship with God and even with each other. Because it is the basis, the foundation of agape love. Now think of it. Think of it. God could have made us as, you know, robots or whatever, zombies or something. And guess what? I mean, he could have and maybe would have loved us in a way. He may have loved his little robot toys. Yeah? And that's what we would have been. We would have been little robot toys. It's toys. Again, think of it. Think of it now. Can a child love their toys? Yeah, right? I think so. But what? The toys can't really love them back. Not really. I mean, you can imagine it, pretend it. That's true. But not really. Can adults sort of love their houses and their cars? I mean, sort of, right? I think so. You can love your house. That's okay. But a house can't love you back. It has no free will. And so that's the catch. That's the experiment. We have free will. It's our own desire for certain outcomes and the ability to make choices, both good and bad. And here on earth, the absolute exposure to temptation. You're getting bombarded by it every day. From all sides. Now, during the season of Lent, we remember that we're not the only ones with free will and who have been bombarded by temptation. In Luke chapter 4 and elsewhere, we hear how Jesus was tempted by the devil directly in the wilderness for how long? 40 days and 40 nights. Without food or water. Make matters worse, right? And also, in Hebrews chapter 4, the author there, who do we say that was? Priscilla. Priscilla. We say it was Priscilla. We don't know. The author of Hebrews says that Jesus was, quote, tempted in every way just as we are, yet he did not sin. Okay, so here's a question for you. By resisting the power of the devil, even when he was almost starving to death, what type of power was Jesus exhibiting? Willpower. Willpower, right? Can you believe it? Our word of the day is back again. Willpower is what he was exhibiting. Yeah. So now here we are. We have free will on the one hand, willpower on the other hand, and temptation, human nature, you know, pride, all that stuff, all standing in between. And so the question becomes, you may ask yourself, and people do ask this question, it's a, kind of a famous question, is it a fair fight? The fight between free will versus willpower in the face of all this temptation and human frailty, is that a fair fight? After all, you say, yeah, Jesus prevailed and had enough willpower, but what? I'm not Jesus. Is that what you say? Maybe. Yeah. I can't resist, you're thinking. Right, Charlie? Sometimes we think that. Talk about it. I'm not Jesus. Yeah. I can't resist, you know, the spending, the gambling, the drugs, the porn, the will of that other woman. I don't have the will to resist. It's not a fair fight. It's just not fair. But what does the Bible say about that? What does the Bible say? Well, in our first reading today, our own St. Paul makes a very bold claim. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13, Paul says this. First of all, he says this. No temptation has overtaken you except what is common to mankind. Yeah, nothing special. Now let me interject. Allow me to interject on that. I find that to be very true. We've heard a lot of stories, you know, from a lot of different people. Nothing really so far has shocked me. Think of that. 2,000 years after he wrote that, you know, although the delivery methods, like through the internet and stuff like that, which is definitely an issue and a problem, the delivery methods have changed. That's certainly true. The nature of the temptations, today, for the most part, they're all in the Bible. They're there. Okay, here then is the key to this text. Paul goes on to say this. Quote, God, we heard it from Barry. God will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. When you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can, don't miss that word, so that you can endure it. So the overall translation here is this. God's plan, sort of, is this. Okay, we have to have free will. That's a must. And we're experiencing life on earth and being exposed to temptation. That's the way it is. God's will for our lives is that we resist that temptation. And he provides, the Bible promises, sufficient willpower to us so that we can endure it. But the key word as I said in that last line, which is exactly what it says in verse 13. The key word is can. God provides us with enough willpower so that we can endure it, but not necessarily that we will endure it. Again, will, back to our word of the day. We can, but will we? Will we resist temptation? That ends up generally being up to us. I mean, we might make excuses, and humans are great. Humans are great at blaming others. But it's almost always on us. It's the chains of our own making that we talk about. It's on us. So in closing, this lesson today is about will. Free will, willpower, and God's will. All three important. And we should be praying about all three of them. And ultimately, we would hope that God's will would be done in us, through us, in our families, in this church, in this country, here on earth, as it is in heaven. Amen.